Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Royal Engineer, a Sapper's Memoir. As compelling as it is a delight to read, Royal Engineer is a military memoir that is truly a breath of fresh air and a must read for anyone who has either an interest in the military or modern history. Those are just like a good read. Delighted to say, joining me live on the line, author of Royal Engineer, a Sapper's Memoir, Philip Thomas. Philip, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. So then, the Royal Engineer. Safe to say that it's all very well being, you know, running around with a rifle, but if you can't get there, if you can't rebuild a bridge, if you can't get across a river, if you can't do anything, there's not much point. So the Royal Engineers is one of the finest regiments in the British Army.
Well, absolutely. I concur that fully, and I like the approach. I always say that the Royal Engineers get you in, and they get you out safely. And this is why one of the mottos of the Royal Engineers, or the Sappers as they're called, is ubique, which is the Latin word for everywhere.
Indeed. Sapper, where does that come from before we get going? Because, I mean, as I said before, my grandfather was RSM in the Royal Engineers, two uncles are in the Royal Engineers. So where does that actually come from for the uninitiated?
Well, it's an old French term, Giles. It means spade or shovel. And in the 1600s, or a little bit earlier than that, the army would employ artisans who could also dig. And sap means to dig a tunnel to get under a fortified position, to then plant fires to basically try and burn down buildings. But it's all about tunneling. That's where the term comes from. But the Royal Engineers, as you'll know, because of your grandfather, his past experience, it's basically that are artisans as well. They're multifaceted.
And it's safe to say that what is cutting edge in combat engineering becomes sort of filters down to civilian life, because there's no better way of testing whether this will work or that will work than on the field of a battle or in training.
Well, absolutely. If it doesn't work in a situation where, especially like a combatant situation, For example, if you're trained to disarm an explosive device, if it can't work on the battlefield, then it's not going to be functional anywhere. So I think in a kind of a way, I wouldn't say that the Royal Engineer world is a testing ground by any means, but it's a massive contributor to things like development of weapons, development of how to disarm weapons. For example, if you think about it, the Royal Air Force originates from the Royal Engineers. We used to be the Flying Corps. There's a huge history behind it. It's all explained in the book, actually. And things like, for example, there are things that have progressed in the military world that have been sort of like really taken to the maximum through the Royal Engineers. Cartography is another one. Topography. There's a lot to it.
So what was the starting point for you for the book and your own obviously experience in the Royal Engineers?
Right, my starting point was when I went to the Falklands about 5 months after the Falklands War finished. So I'm talking about January 1983. I was on an exercise, a six-month deployment, to basically try and recover the islands or start recovering the island after the conflict with Argentina. And I knew from the first day that I landed in Port Stanley that I wanted to write a diary about the six-month tour, because I had this feeling this was going to be something I'd never, ever experienced before and never will again. And I'd never written a diary in my life. This is the only journal I ever wrote. And I wrote a daily account of what happened on that tour. And I knew then that I wanted to share this story, but encompass around it then, around the journal, the whole of my army career. And that's where really the idea came from. And that's going back, as I say, 83, 40 years ago.
What was your role there? Because people tend to think, okay, so you finish the conflict and everybody goes home. But of course, there's an awful lot of ordnance still around the place. There's the wreckage of war. So you can't just leave it and let it sort of decay and rust, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you go onto any post-conflict theatre or operation, it's not a nice business. As you quite rightly say, there's live ammunition, incendiary devices like anti-personnel mines. But on top of that, you've also then got to repair the infrastructure of that area. And in this case, it was the Falklands. And so you had to then make sure that there was a permanent defence system in place in case there was a reprisal or another resurgence of an Argentinian attack, which thankfully never came. But you're also then having to trying and putting a defence system which merges quite sensitively with the local population. And in the kind of way, you're also giving them confidence that their home is going to be, you know, brought back to life. And it's a very delicate operation, but it's also very, I found it to be very fulfilling. I know that may be, you know, maybe an understatement, but it made me feel good about what I was doing. I was actually serving a purpose.
And looking back on that time, you say, you know, it is serving a purpose, because normal life can't go on for the. I mean, one of the points of fighting in the Falklands and the losses was the fact that to have that quality of life, because the islands had been taken. So you can't say, oh well, here's your quality of life, but you can't go over there for 20 years, can you?
Mm. Yeah, I think the bottom line in all of this, Giles, is the fact that this was an illegal invasion of a British overseas territory. So we had an obligation as a nation to look after one of our territories. And the Falkland Islanders, they wanted us to help them and protect them. And so, you know, it did serve an actual genuine purpose, not only political and military. You know, there was a dispute. There's been an ongoing dispute with the Falklands as far back as 1800s. Mm. There was a First Falklands War during the First World War. You know, there's been lots of conflicts over the islands. But first and foremost, they are a British overseas and remain a British overseas territory, like South Georgia. And so we had an obligation, and quite rightly so, to defend Ireland and then help them recover.
The other interesting thing is the fact that it's the sheer scope of what the Royal Engineers do, because other regiments, if you're light infantry, you kind of pretty much know what you're going to be doing, and if you are, I don't know, if you're Royal, you know, if you're a Remy or whatever, you know what you're doing. But the Royal Engineers, it's such a broad scope, because people might think, okay, well, they ford rivers, they, you know, they build bridges, or they put roads in. But there is, isn't there, without starting to sound like some sort of telenovel, no one day is the same.
No, every day is different. And I would say that this is the reason why I mentioned earlier in the interview that the Corps of Engineers, Royal Engineers, they are multifaceted. As you quite rightly say, it's not only about fixing a road or putting a new road in. It's about setting up a defence base. And I mean, some defence bases, if you look at places like Mount Pleasant, they're absolutely huge. Mm. But then there's things then like bulk fuel installations. They also serve a logistical service as well, maintenance. It is really such a broad picture of what a particular corps in the army can do. But as you say, it's not sort of like one job only. Every day is different, and you could be doing one job one day and a completely... For example, quarry management. That was one of my jobs after I left Kelly's Garden. I was into quarry management and looking, you know, providing the rocks. So we were now dealing with explosives and providing the rocks then to the engineers who would then build the extension to a Port Stanley runway.
Right.
And then setting up, you know, so it is, it's almost like a massive version of Bob the Builder.
I'd like to see that campaign medal for a start.
Oh, yeah, I'd love it.
As we say, it's the role of the engineers as well as pushing across a message. We're not just talking about combat, we're talking about peacetime as well, and the amount of beneficial effect it can have, because with the training that the Royal Engineers have, they can go to areas and put in infrastructure that perhaps civilian contractors can't, and that promotes a positive image. I mean, we keep seeing the military as in many cases, a negative image as being an oppressive force. But if you have a highly trained group of men and women who can change the lives of the local population for the better, that is perhaps of more value than being able to put other types of boots on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. Because one of the roles of the engineers as well, there are other departments in the British Army that massively help, especially the Royal Logistics Corps, is emergency aid to the civil communities. So, for example, when COVID kicked in, now, the amount of work that had to be done, for example, to set up bases, et cetera, that could deal with COVID, Royal Engineers were part of the big group of that. The other one were, as I say, the Royal Logistics Corps. But when it comes to, for example, like flood barriers, say, for example, now, Storm Desmond, the north of England and parts of the south east of the country were devastated, and they had to go in, and one of the dams had to be completely blocked by using sandbags as a temporary measure, which was the Royal Engineers that actually went in there and fulfilled that role. So their aid is not only sort of like to protect the country in times of conflict or national security, it's also about helping the civil communities when things go wrong through nature.
What sort of skill set do you think you need to be a Royal Engineer? And is it something that you can come in with a couple of basics and then you will be taught the rest? Is that what you found? Did you come in with, I don't know, O-levels or A-levels in maths or physics, or did you come in completely green and it was on-the-job training and you were just willing to learn? Yeah, it's interesting to talk about world because we're talking, I was just saying off air because, you know, as I said, my grandfather was RSM and one of his places was he was in Cyprus in the 50s and the 60s and what a if you're going to enjoy a bit of soldiering in the sun, then that's probably, you know, the world you can see perhaps a long way from a windswept Port Stanley there, Philip, but you know you can certainly get around if you're in the Royal Engineers.
Well, I think that's icing on the cake because 1 minute you couldn't be in the very, very cold of the South Atlantic, depending on what time of year you're there. Obviously, luckily, I was there in the summer, but you could also then be anywhere else in the world. And for example, one of the places I wanted to go to, but I never got there, was Belize. Now, you're not going to get a nicer place than Belize And I mean, it must be really tough, you know, sitting near an atoll, you know, drinking an orange with ice.
All those tropical, all those Caribbean beaches. I mean,
absolutely.
But you've got to think of the quality for the sandbags there, Philip, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't dispute that.
Does the book look at some of the history? Because, I mean, again, I remember my papa, one of the things he had on the wall at home was, it's a very famous picture. I think it's during the Italian campaign with the fording the river or putting a bridge up under fire. Is it Monte Cassino? Or is it, you know, the really famous picture there is of Royal Marines putting a Bailey Bridge across the river? I think it's Monte Cassino. Is that, do you handle that at all?
Yeah. I mean, they built some. In fact, some of the bridges. Like for example, the famous Bailey Bridge. Now, a lot of those are still in existence, you know, they're really fantastic. But I think one of the famous bridges as well, if I'm not mistaken, was when Arnhem got blown. You know, got really badly damaged during World War II.
Yeah,
and the amount of bridging then, and this was bridging. That was on an unprecedented scale, you know, really sort of. I have actually had experience of building a Bailey Bridge, and it's incredible when you can see the bridge actually going out. And in a day, you bridge a span that, with no disrespect, but some civil companies, engineering companies in those days, couldn't do in a week. It's almost like a human machine in operation.
Somebody's just shouted in my ear. It's called Bridging the Rapido at Mount Monte Cassino, which is this well known painting. If anybody wants to go and check it out, it's Bridging the Rapido. What's your proudest memory? What was the memory that makes you think about now, makes you smile about your time in the Royal Engineers?
I think one of my favourite memories, this was when I was in Berlin. And I was doing a heavy ferry crossing exercise on a stretch of water in Berlin,
right?
Which is called Havel. And when I was there, the Berlin Wall was still up, so we were in West Berlin. And Spandau Prison was right next to the barracks where I was staying.
Okay.
And obviously, Spandau Barracks is famous because that was where Rudolf Hess, the deputy Nazi leader, was interned after the war. And I was in a barracks called Smuts Barracks, which was quite, well, literally adjacent to it. So I went into the loft of the stable block one day, which I shouldn't have done. And I went to the far end because there was a window there. And all of a sudden, within about, I would say, no more than 15, 20 meters from me, is a Russian guard looking at me, and he spots me, and he tells me, and he's waving as if to say, "You're not supposed to be there." And an old man is walking in the garden. And I'm sure that was Rudolf Hess.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then the next day, I was in Berlin. I walked into Berlin then, down here, Strasse. And I had the good fortune to see U.S. President Jimmy Carter. And as this, and in those days, you could get quite close to the crowd, especially in Berlin. And he waved because he could see I had a camera. And he just waved, and I got that photograph. And that is in the book.
So what do you hope that people are going to take from the book? Is it an appreciation of the Royal Engineers? For those who don't know, it's just a good read of a career in the Royal Engineers. And this is why the Royal Engineers exist, and perhaps it's more than you might know at a cursory glance?
I would say that the book is the audience I wanted to capture, and I hope to capture, is I want people who want to understand what the Royal Engineers are about, what they're capable of doing, but I also have merged into it a bit of history about why certain conflicts started that I was involved with. For example, Bosnia, the tail end, you know, the aftermath of the Falklands. And I also want to tell people nice stories about what life in the army can be, people you can meet. For example, I spent 2 days escorting a very famous rock singer who's still around called Fish of Marillion.
Marillion, yeah.
Yeah, and I spent 2 days with him in Bosnia. And then I went to, the book is about what life is like in the army, not only as a soldier, but as an individual who's looking for a life of excitement, adventure, training. So you do the sport, you do the adventure training, if you want to. I went on to become a mountain expedition leader, went to Norway, abseiling 200 feet, loved it. That had nothing to do with the actual role of a soldier. But this is what I wanted to share with the reader, and I want to share with the reader. And in there, you know, there's also some funny stories as well about, you know, when you saw the CSE, the Combined Service Entertainment shows. You know, there's a lot of funny stories about that. So there's the story encompasses good times, sad times, but first and foremost, I couldn't have been in a better corps.
The thing, absolutely, but the thing is, people have this idea of the military is it's all highly, you know, you're in one regiment and that's it and that's all you do. But actually, there are so many opportunities, and somebody else is paying for it most of the other time as well, that you are able to do things like Norway, like, you know, there is hard work, there are tough times, but on the flip side of it, there are some amazing experiences that you don't get in civilian life.
Yes, there is. You are presented, and I would say this is right across the armed services. There's opportunities for you to do things which are over and beyond your day-to-day job as a, for example, a infantry soldier or an intelligence officer or a Royal Engineer or somebody working in the logistic corps. But what you also gain then outside of that kind of like, if you can call it like the adventure training side of life, you gain an experience which instills even more confidence into your own ability. I would say that when you do all these courses with the British Army, whether it's adventure training or, you know, really sort of like real in-depth hobbies, what it's doing is it's basically expanding your capability and ability, which you can then bring into your day-to-day job.
If there's anybody out there listening who, you know, he or she may be considering a career in the military and thinking, you know, I'm 16, 17, sounds quite good. You know, you don't have to play Call of Duty. It's not like that. But what would you say to anybody who's considering it? Or maybe they've got sons or even grandchildren who might be thinking, you know, I'm not quite sure what I want to do. Maybe the military is for me, isn't for me. What would you say to them?
I would say if anybody's curious or sort of like interested in becoming a member of the armed forces, I would say that ahead of them is a fantastic career. But it's up to that individual to go and then talk with people, talk with the recruitment officers and the recruitment officers, and they will really give you a very good a constructive insight into what the British Armed, the Army can actually provide to you as an individual. They will also, in a kind of a way, enthuse you. And for example, I would say never be scared to join the British Army because you're not tied in there for life. If you do the 22 years, you will get a pension, but you may not want to do it. My son was in the Welsh Guards, and I'm very proud of the fact that he served with the Welsh Guards. And he didn't go on to complete the full service. He's done 9 years at the end of it, but he always says that he'd love to go back in the Army. So I would say go along and go and introduce yourself and have a good chat and be as honest with them as you can be and tell them what you want. And I think that they'll probably excite you.
Now, if I was to get into my car and drive, turn right and drive 30 minutes down the road, I'd end up in Gibraltar because they were that close to the rock. Does Gibraltar feature in any of your tales, or are there any impressions of the rock itself? Because that must be an engineering project in itself.
Well, funny enough, I did mention Gibraltar in the book. I do mention Gibraltar because, funny enough, when I was coming to the tail end of my tour in the Falklands in 83, my mother and I were corresponding, and I was she was very kindly organising a trip for me to go to Morocco because I wanted to do a bit of trekking in the Atlas Mountains. And I disliked Morocco so much that one day I decided I'm going to go across on the ferry to the rock. It's only, 11-mile trip. And so I went over to Gibraltar for the day, and I had my camera stolen by a Barbary ape.
Ah. Occupational hazard there, Philip.
Occupational hazard. So I've got no fond memories of photographic memories of Gibraltar. But yeah, and I went back. But what I could not get over was the amount of military that was based in, especially the Navy, based in Gibraltar itself, Giles. I know it's a very hotly political dispute between Spain and the United Kingdom. But the fact of the matter is, if you can, you know, when I was there, I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And I could not get over the amount of military presence there, permanent.
Yeah, and also the tunnels as well. I mean, if you're looking for engineering projects, I mean, the Great Siege and the siege tunnels, they are quite something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I went to the St. Michael's Cave where I couldn't believe this. They held a Miss World competition there one year, I think. And I think they also held a Eurovision Song Contest in St. Michael's Cave. But if anybody is in Gibraltar and they find a Barbary ape with an Olympus 240 camera, if they could deliver it back or send it back.
They can drop off at the studio, Philip, and I'll get them popped round. The book is called Royal Engineer, A Sapper's Memoir. It's by Philip Thomas, who we're speaking today. Philip, are you online? Can people find you online, or is it best just to sort of download the book or find the book via various booksellers?
The book is very easy to purchase, Giles. You can either order it through Amazon, Waterstones, Barnes & Noble, and if they want to, then they can also obtain a copy from whether it's hardback, paperback, or an ebook. They can go to Austin Macaulay Publishers, who are my publisher. It's very easy to obtain.
The book is called Royal Engineer, A Sapper's Memoir. It's by Philip Thomas. Philip, it's been an absolute pleasure and honour to speak to you today.
Likewise, Giles. Take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.